Ever wish that you could take the mystery out of search engine results? Well, now you can. Discover how you can dominate the first three pages of Google with Key Difference Media. Go to keydifferencemedia.com/dominate. Content marketing unlocked.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is James Craig, your host of 4D Leverage, the radio show on Blog Talk Radio that amplifies the movers and shakers of the emerging economy. And I have with me my co-host, Karnika Yashwa, Mr. Key. Good morning, sir. Good evening to you.
Good morning.
Hi. Wow. Have you had a busy week?
Very busy week. Very, very busy week.
You know, there is a lot of talk in the world about artificial intelligence, but I don't think some of those guys have met Mr. Key, because I think you have a battery pack inside, you know, the back of you that rarely needs recharging. Amazing what you pull off every week. We've come across a blog post or two that have laid out some of the biggest challenges that are out there in content marketing today. And this is interesting to me because content marketing, the way everyone faces it, has these huge challenges. And they're a challenge all the way across the board. We have approaches that break some of these challenges down, and we're going to talk through them. But these challenges are what they are the gateway to what content marketing is really coming to. And I think it's important to look at content marketing and ask yourself, if I didn't have to fight all these challenges, how could I leverage content marketing to significantly impact my business? And that impact could come from my voice, your message. It could come from a variety of angles. It could hit the bottom line. It could be integrated with other strategies and other ideas. And there are so many new tools and so many things that can be done. But oftentimes, because we're faced with these challenges, these are the gatekeepers that keep us from using content in a much more powerful way, out-of-the-box type of strategic thinking that we often talk about on this show on how we leverage it for different clients. But at the same time, if clients could get out of their way, they'd see a whole new level of their own of how to make content marketing just so powerful for them outside of just the two-dimensional approach that most people struggle with because of these challenges. Dare I say that?
Right.
So I want to throw these challenges, some of these challenges out there. And number one, let's give some practical things that can be done in-house for people to overcome these challenges. But at the same time, let's magnify that with how we overcome them, kind of put it in a can and offer it at such a competitive price that they would, side-by-side comparison of doing it yourself or doing it with Key Difference Media would be an obvious choice. But I think a lot of people don't really realize that there is an option out there for overcoming and for consolidating some of these challenges into leverage. And that's really what we're doing here. We're alchemists of the content world. How do you like that? So content marketing ROI, probably one of the biggest ones. And the idea behind trying to be able to track your individual pieces of content and determine what the ROI return is on that is on everyone's mind. And Key's going to give you a perspective that will involve a lot of process in order for that to come about. But the solutions are very simple, simply spoken. But they oftentimes require a significant platform by which to produce those solutions. So Key, when we talk about ROI and a return on investment from content marketing, there's some expectations that have to be established before we really head down that road. So take us down that road and kind of establish that for us.
Right. when it comes to ROI, we need to look at it in two ways. Number one, how do we define those variables and how do we estimate them first? And second, how do we go about meeting it and reevaluating whether our estimates were correct? Because we need a starting point. Without a starting point, it would just go crazy trying to derive it. So when the entire content marketing is out there sitting before you like a beast, and when you're trying to evaluate its ROI, it might just get too cumbersome and too complex because it goes across the length and breadth, and trying to put specific numbers to it as a whole might not make sense. So I would rather divide that into different categories. What are the benefits of content marketing? And I would start to look at each of those variables and use traditional systems as well as modern systems to evaluate it. So now for content marketing, five major areas. One, search engine optimization. Second is the social media. Third is online reputation management. Fourth is the branding. Fifth is lead generation and traffic. So now there are traditional ways through which you can measure each of these and their specific ROI. So for example, if you take search engine optimization, they would always look at what is the traffic per keyword and what happens if someone gets up, what is the average number of traffic that they might end up receiving and what will be value per traffic or value per visitor to the site. So now this is a set of data which we definitely can work out. But when we use that with content marketing, that's us appearing in just one keyword is less because you might end up appearing in way too many keywords, which makes it hard to evaluate, but you still have a starting point. You don't have to really get it 100% down. Even if you get 20% of it down, you're still being extremely conservative, and that's a good place to start, and you can start filling it as go. So with content marketing, the keywords that you are going to be using will directly change with the types of content that you're promoting on a time-to-time basis. And now we can definitely make a basic set of keywords that we are looking to rank for and their long tails. We can do an estimate based on that to figure out what is the total traffic for that target set of keywords. And then we definitely can arrive at a calculation. If you're ranking on the first page as a video, what would be your CTR, click-through rate? If you're ranking on images on the top, what would be your possible click-through rate? And if you're just ranking as a result, what would the click-through rate be? Because you have certain standards and expectations in the industry which you can use as a baseline for this calculation. And if it is a competitive primary secondary keyword, then you might be on the fifth place because there would be four ads on top of you. Then the CTR might actually be lower than being on the first, second, or third on a long tail keyword. So working across all this, yeah, it is comprehensive. The one reason why content marketing ROI calculation is so hard and heavy is because it might actually take you dedicated days to even come up to an estimate and reevaluate. But that's what it takes, and that's what needs to be done, and it needs to be done. So this entire calculation that we spoke about so far is only for the search engine optimization part, the benefit that content marketing provides by giving the exposure through the search engines. And now going on to social media, you again have an estimate based on what is the number of, what is the value per engagement. If let's say we have a post which is shared 10 times and ends up getting X amount of likes, what is every like equal to for us? You know, for example, if we receive 100 likes, then we might end up having 5 visitors coming to the site, and that might help us turn one visitor into a sale. So 100 likes could be a sale to us, and that really depends on a business to business, the type of process they have, the type of funnel they have. If all they're doing is increasing their user base extremely well and they're having a future product that is yet to be released, then their ROI is going to be very distinct and futuristic. If they have an existing product in place and they are actively promoting that product, any like on any traffic that comes to their social page and any engagement that comes there is immediately getting translated into calculatable dollars, it's going to be more straightforward, and we could use the data of the funnel to figure out the metrics there. So now with social media, again, you need to look at what each fan is valuable to, and what is the value for every fan that is in your page, and what is the value for every view that you receive on, or the reach that you receive on every post that you publish. And yeah, of course, you can break it down to any small number that you want to, but when someone starts, I would really like them to stay on a high level, not to get into too much of details and numbers, because that might just be so overwhelming that they might not even end up moving forward till the end. But the kind of system that I'm talking about here might really work for enterprises. And if, as it comes to small businesses and solopreneurs, they need to tune down on the metrics and consolidate it to just few top three numbers or top five numbers per channel. So now that's it for the social media. The same thing goes for online reputation. Again, online reputation metric is only calculatable if there is a need for you to safeguard your reputation online, which everyone has. But then the value of what a bad reputation would do online is not known to most businesses. There are businesses which are completely closed down. They shut down their website, they shut down their business because they have bad reputations. Probably restaurants and small businesses are completely aware of it because they face the most difficulty with the reviews online. So now what happens if there's one bad review online? What happens if there are two bad reviews online? What is the average reduction in the conversion rate that you face as a business? So let's assume that you're having a 5% conversion rate with everything going good. And after there are a couple of bad reviews on the internet on the first page, let's say your conversion rate hits 3% because there are 2% of the people who check about your reviews online before they buy from you, and that takes a direct effect on how your business converts. And if that is the case, the value of those two conversions or the lifetime value of those two clients should be used as a metric to determine the ROI of the online reputation management side of content marketing. Now, coming on to branding, it's again a similar question. So branding by itself is a very lousy area where the calculations are very much projected, but that becomes an entity and part of content marketing which we need to consider here as well. So as a business, let's assume that you do not have any brand and you're trying to market yourself. What is the conversion rate at that point, and when you're trying to have all your branding in place, and what is the increase that you find in your conversion which is attributed to the branding part? So how do you consider which is attributed to branding? The repeat users. How many people are coming back directly to the site, and how many people are coming back after 3, 4, or 5 visits to make a sale? So if you can have a proper marketing automation which can track all these areas effectively about every email that goes out and every visitor that comes to the site, every form that's been filled, if a CRM can effectively track all these, then you definitely have different metrics through which you can arrive at a value for branding. And finally, for the leads and traffic, that is the foundational part of everything. It could be search engine, social media. It all comes down to lead and traffic. So what is the value per lead? What is the value for every visitor that's coming onto the site? And this is a no-brainer because every paid ads and every system online, any system that we use to calculate, it all boils down to this part. What is the value per lead and what is the value per visitor? And these two, again, has a direct correlation with the funnel that they have on the site when it goes to selling the product. So all these comes together to determine the value of the entire content marketing campaign. So now you need to start adding each of these areas, and you come to an estimate of what a particular budget invested in content marketing would provide as an end ROI. And now when you start executing it, there comes another beast by itself. Now, as you execute, you need to start tracking every part of it. You need to start tracking the leads that comes through the search engine, through social media, through different specific posts. Now, you could do a lot of things here. Either you could start tracking every link that goes out, or you could track them by source of where they're coming from, or you could track it by campaigns. So there are multiple ways you can execute it. It really depends on what your strategy is. And if you're trying to do everything at the same time, then it becomes a little more complex, because in content marketing, you cannot always use trackable links, because some sites really need naked links or direct plain links, and they would not allow anchor text or trackable links effectively. And there are definitely some means of content marketing where you just display the link in the image or in the asset that you distribute out there, and people will be looking at it and typing and coming in as a direct traffic. So even in direct traffic, you need to divide that into the first-time direct traffic and repeat users. And the first-time direct traffic could ideally be attributed to the new users generated through content marketing, whereas the ROI coming from repeat users, direct traffic could be attributed to the branding. So every small part, you might be breaking the entire analytics into dozen different types, and you would be again breaking down each type based on the behavior patterns, and you'll be attributing those ROI to specific buckets that I coined earlier. So when you start working with all these metrics, you might find some metrics might not be make sense for your business. For example, let's say your business is not dependent on online reputation, and let's say you never had a chance where some bad review came which affected your conversion, or probably you didn't even test any of those in the first place as a probably as a small business, then you don't have a metric there. Either you can add a guesstimate there, or you could just remove that from the sequence. So the question comes to me in some of the discussions related to this. So now we are doing a lot of evaluations, guesstimates, projections, and then also tracking, which might not 100% be accurate. So how do you end up arriving at an ROI and an estimate which is appropriate? So my answer would be, when you're making an estimate, just make the estimate and then divide that by 10 or divide it by 5. Reduce your risk. You know, if you just take 10% of that estimate and it still brings you a profit, that's great. If you just take 20% of that estimate and still that makes you profitable, that's conservative to me. And just do that if that's a confidence issue out there. And if it comes to an end ROI campaign, calculating the ROI after the campaign, post campaign, then it's 100% out there, and the 100% has to be attributed to something or other. If content marketing is the only marketing that's running out there, which should be the case with most small businesses and solopreneurs, or even many mid-level corps, because many might have offline teams and offline modes of marketing, which can definitely be tracked separately. And content marketing can easily be devised to function on a let's say certain landing pages or certain parts. And you know, definitely content marketing would always have much more benefit than directing traffic to certain pages in the funnel. But still, you know, you can calculate and attribute the ROI to it. So in any way, you know, when you calculate it, there might be cases where you have few things moving from one place to another, but it's all 100% by end of the day. You might change the place where the ROI is attributed to within the content marketing, but you are not definitely going to give that benefit to something else, and you're not going to mistake a benefit of content marketing to something else. So end of the day, you will get to it, and it is a process. It takes a lot of customization, streamlining, editing, improvisation, correcting the mistakes along the way, and that is going to be specific to every business. It is not one size fits all, because based on what other activities the business is doing, things would change. What are the other things that's flowing into the funnel? That will change things, and that will affect things in a big way. So if they are doing, for example, sending a cold ad traffic to a same funnel that content marketing is functioning in, then you would just end up receiving a lower conversions on the cold traffic and a higher conversions on the content marketing. But if you're averaging and taking a conversion rate based on the mixture of both cold traffic and a warmer traffic from content marketing, the value that you would provide to content marketing ROI would be lower, but you're not definitely going to overestimate it. You might reduce the ROI, but you will never build up an ROI which doesn't exist. So that is an assurance that you always have and can have when you function at this level in the calculations. So yeah, that's a small part of it.
Small part of it. Well, I see this entire approach being layered, and you mentioned this several different times from your perspective. And if you throw in there additional analysis, you know, this all at some point, there you almost develop a second sense for how your content marketing is affecting the other elements of your business. Probably easier to justify in a smaller business, but it seems like this analysis approach requires multiple perspectives, multiple metrics, and a bit of experience to know how to apply the throttle or to, you know, to shift when it is required. Now, let me understand. Kind of walk us through how you, on a monthly basis, enable clients to get a hold of their ROI from a position where you kind of take care of all this for them and steer them through this analysis. How does that interaction look? What does that interaction look like? And how do you do that? Because, man, that's a huge piece of anybody's content marketing platform, is being able to control the very end of it.
So basically, this entire analysis which I was referring to by itself is few days of work and probably more than a week's work, because the setup process by itself is overwhelming, and then you need to keep changing, correcting, improvising. So it is almost like a full-time thing when it comes to content marketing. So when we work with our clients, we divide the, you know, let's say the client has no other marketing campaigns running, then anything that happens there is the ROI coming from the content marketing. So it's directly, it's so directly proportional, and you really don't have to go through this NDA exercise other than when you want to evaluate it to improvise it internally, for which we have, you know, many other ways of doing it rather than the entire approach which I explained here, because this approach is more for bringing it into a very basic terms which is understandable for all. But from a technical standpoint, you always can evaluate what works, what doesn't work without having to go through the entire calculation yourself. So that really helps if the client just doesn't have any other campaign running online. And if the client has multiple campaigns running online, we would look at ways through which we can analytically divide them. So let's say, can I have two different landing pages or two different set of funnels which can, you know, one can be used for content marketing, one can be used elsewhere. And is there some way I could look at what is happening on the other side of the marketing, that whatever the client is doing, and how do I track and track the effect of content marketing in that? So we would be setting up a two-layered analytics here, where one just focuses anything that happens through a particular funnel is coming directly to our data, and one is more of an influence. So whatever they have, the content marketing would affect it positively or negatively, and ideally it's always positively. And what is that change in rate over a period of time? So that change in rate would be something that we pull onto our analytics as part of our ROI. So again, whenever we do anything that involves an existing marketing system, we do that with a lot of collaboration with the client and understanding, and at the same time very cautious, because might really be something that they are doing at their side which could be causing it. So we need to give them the sense of security that we are not claiming on things that's happening on their side to ours. So we really wait and look at data on a long term, like 3 to 6 months before even we conclude on something that's happening on their end being an effect of content marketing. So that's about it for small businesses. But when it comes to enterprises, the game changes a lot out there. So when it comes to enterprise, let's say your content marketing campaign would be doing a great benefit to their branding, and you really have no way or no methodology to evaluate it until and unless you have complete access to their system, which mostly we would not be having access to. So in those cases, we use a direct benefit from the content marketing, looking at the channels and where which the channels that we create as a new channel for them, and channels where they already have presence, we look at the change in value, how much is it increasing. So we use a comparative and comparative analysis there to determine the increase. So in those cases, we definitely would be losing a lot of ROI numbers on our end, but we would definitely have numbers which can effectively show them what it is. But we do an 3 months and 6 months once quarterly analysis for clients, and in those analysis, we would be having enough data to take their existing publicly available material or confidentially provided data to compare it and overlay on top of what we have to show them the difference. So there are some metrics on content marketing which cannot be just shown on a day-to-day, weekly or monthly basis, and those metrics are very powerful, like metrics on branding and brand perception, positioning in the mind, and how it affects the end users, return rate, and all those things might sometimes be the metrics of 3 to 6 months range instead of in the first month, the second month, monthly reporting process. So that's how we divide it, and we function and we customize it meticulously based on the business, their current need, where they stand, where they're heading to, what are the other operations they have, and all these other factors.
You know, I listen to you talk about all these other factors and just with what I'm aware of, and it's like we're trying to keep an ecosystem in balance, right? I mean,
correct.
There's so many variables. There are so many aspects to look into. It's so fluid that it really is like an ecosystem. So there is a lot of credibility to what you do in the beginning to establish your message, to establish how this content is going to affect your organization from stem to stern, right? As opposed
right.
to just trying to target it across one product. I mean, it really gives a lot of viability to the nonprofit for-profit relationship, because that brings into this idea of what is the culture of our company, what is the theme of everything, and how does it all flow? You know, it kind of forces the company to think in that larger perspective and channel it all into, all right, what does this content do? Because if your content is built to affect different elements of your business, such as you mentioned branding and sales specific, et cetera, but also at other layers that are internal to your company, if that entire picture is taken into perspective, now you have different areas that you can measure the impact of and compare them against one another. It just creates greater density in how you approach the ROI of your content.
Right. A quick example here would be, we were working with a manufacturer in the past and a distributor, and when we were working with them, they had a huge sales force which is offline, and our content marketing was going on normally the way it would run, and we were able to track what we were doing online effectively because they were not running much anything else online. But then there came a time when we know that they, I mean, we requested and we suggested them to utilize the content that we create as part of their sales process. When their sales agents are going out there talking to clients, we want them to hand over a video or hand over a audio message or a slide using the iPad that they take over with them during the meetings, and also to use that as a reason to touch base with them, sending them a quick video and calling them and asking them to check that out, and different ways to touch base with them instead of just trying to say, okay, why don't you buy from us right now? Is it a good time to buy from us right now? That's a monotonous communication. So we converted that into an interesting, educative, better experience and a better model. And again, that is something that we did as a consultative journey, and that's something that we do with every client when we work with them. We don't really charge for it because we believe an asset is something that is worthy for a client and that's their property, and we need to teach them all different ways they can effectively leverage it. So when we teach them to leverage all this, they were doing it, and they at one point really did find a difference in two areas. Number one, when their clients were trying to hear about them, the conversion rate on the for appointment setting. So whenever they call and they set up an appointment, it seems that the clients are, before they give an appointment, or many of them at least, they go online, Google about them, and see if they can find some information about them before they fix up for a meeting. And now with the content marketing and with the presence that they have in the search engine, in the first 2-3 pages with all their content types, the appointment rate in the phone increased because they thought that these guys know what they are speaking about, and they wanted to set up an appointment to hear more on what they have to say. And when they actually went to physically meet them and show all this, the number of minutes that they spent on the meeting increased, because now they don't just sell and they don't have to be sent away after the sales process. Now they have some videos to share and they have some material to share, and the client is interested to learn what is out there. You know, probably a 5-minute video and a discussion around it could be 10, 12 minutes. And that is an added time. That's if it's a 30 minutes meeting, that's a good 30% increase in the time they spend with the client out there. And that's another metric. And when we finally look at the conversion rate, the time to sale, it was much faster and much more easier. And the people were, the sales guys were lesser stressful in the process. And when we arrived at all these different metrics, it was powerful. It was powerful on the kind of impact content marketing made. But the question is, would a client usually try to track all these things? Probably no. They would not have a reason to track all this. But if we get them to track it, and if they really do, then they can actually start to monitor the kind of difference each of these assets make. In this particular case, we were able to figure out that videos are helping more than all other content types, because when they go out there and they show them the video, that keeps them engaged. If they show them something else that might need them to read, they don't, and videos were helping them to go through it. So we were able to fine-tune what the sales team needs out there, and we were able to help them and help them increase all these numbers. So this is just a quick example of how ROI can be calculated in not so direct manner, because whenever we talk about content marketing ROI, we all jump into Google Analytics. We all jump into all the analytical tool out there, buy the $300 per month tool, buy the $1,000 per month tool, or $47 per month tool, and try to look at the data there, put them in an Excel report, and send it to somebody. But that doesn't just work that way. Content marketing is powerful, bigger, and holistic than just what happens in social media and search engines. And if until and unless we look at it the way it truly is, we are not going to get the real ROI at any point in time.
Hey, you know, all of these challenges that we're looking at, they all go back and point to ROI, because ROI obviously is why we're doing it, but it's that moving target once again. So we have all this content that we're putting out there, how much of a role does consistency play in the exponential effectiveness of your content? I picture, sporting events, athletics, any kind of competitive event, as a matter of fact. When you get right up against the numbers and you start talking first and second place, you start talking about exponentially greater amounts of energy, skill, and edge that you need in order to move the dial smaller and smaller percentages. And content marketing seems to be that same way. When you get everything perfect, that's when you're ready just to begin, right? I mean, as opposed to just kind of being haphazard in how you approach your content. This idea of ROI, this idea of having multiple ways to lay it out there, et cetera, if it's all on a back end that's not stable enough to create consistency, whether it's because you're a solopreneur or whether it's just because you're too big of a company and communication is difficult between departments, et cetera. But whatever the case may be, what role does consistency play in maintaining and maximizing that ROI?
All right. So consistency is the primary and key factor here, because you cannot do anything online if you're not consistent about it. If you try to do a search engine optimization for 2 months and you leave it out there, then it doesn't help. The same with social media. If you go to a page and someone finds that your page is not updated for the last 3 days or 1 week, even that small period is good enough to show that you're not consistent with what you're doing. And if a page is not updated for quite a long time, then they know that you're not in business and they would not even care to look at your page anymore or your website anymore. So anything that has been done online, if it is not consistent, it's not going to work at all. So if you're going up to 99% and you stop your consistency at the last point, you still go back to zero. And that's a sad truth, because the online world is moving at a very fast pace. It's running like crazy, and people are spending huge money on creating high quality content and getting it out there, distributing it, and so on. And in that race, if you could even do a small 1% effort, but if you do that 1% effort consistent over the period of months, then you win. If you are doing 100% of the effort on 1 month and you leave it out there, you still don't win. So it's a matter of consistency. Plan yourself a longer time. Don't just try to blast it at one moment and try to expect it to work. So consistency in terms of time is really essential, because you cannot evaluate something like a branding or online reputation management or any of the other benefits of content marketing by doing it on a one-time basis or a short-time basis. So the consistency goes beyond time. It also goes to the message that you deliver out there. You need to be consistent in the message. Otherwise, you're going to end up confusing readers. And if you confuse readers once, they are not going to think about what it is that you're trying to say. They will just run away from the page. It's the end of the story. If something is making their life harder, they don't need it. And if you can make it easier, do it. Otherwise, don't do it. And that's the attitude that consumers carry. So consistency in the message, in the colors, in the way you represent your brand, all the branding guidelines, all that matters. All those are basic fundamentals, and you really don't have to, you don't really have to think too much about it, but you need it. That's not an optional thing. That's mandatory. And consistency of time becomes the decision-making factor in terms of whether your campaign online is going to win or not. Because if you're looking at a six-month campaign, you can be rest assured that 80% of the campaigns running online will not run after 6 months period in time. Not probably 90%, that's the majority of the people. They run it for 1 month, 1.5 month, 2 months, 3 months. But touching 6 months by itself is not something that is usually done by most small businesses and solopreneurs and so on. But whoever does it, they really win, and they have a story to say. And if you really look at all the success stories, you would know that they did it over a period of time, not overnight. The success happens overnight. That's the tipping point. When they reach the tipping point, they shoot up in the sky. It's just like in search engine. If you're on the 10,000th page or if you're on the second page, it doesn't really matter. You don't get any traffic. Even if you're on the end of the first page, it doesn't matter. When you come to the third portion or the first portion, that's when you reach a point in time when things shoot up like a rocket and you'd see huge traffic flowing over to you. And until that point, you might feel like nothing is working out, but it is working out. It's a process and it's taking its time to mature. And when it does, the tipping point happens, the magic happens, and you just be smiling end-to-end for a few days from that point.
I love it. You're in the business of making smiles. So, okay, so, and I, consistency is the hardest thing, especially at the solopreneur level, because you're just too bogged down with so many different things. But that consistency starts to lend itself to your credibility, as you've mentioned, and to your authority. But what else can we do with content to create that sense of trust across the web? I mean, what is it that content marketing does that me running ads or some other form of even offline advertising, what does content marketing bring to that authoritative positioning that I'm trying to, you know, that I'm trying to be that, what was that popular buzzword? Not Maverick, the Maven. Trying to be the Maven in my niche or the Maven in the industry, and really with all the noise, with competition, just with everything that buzzes around, how does content marketing, how is it, give me the argument that would state that content marketing would be worth investing in to gain authority over some other form, some other means. And,
right.
You know, it's interesting. You could be setting up an authority on anybody from an individual at an executive level to a superstar, an athlete could use it, a nonprofit. This authority thing carries a lot of weight.
Right. So basically, it's just one word, thought leadership. Leadership is what this content marketing establishes, which nothing else can even come closer to. So, for example, you're using any other traditional means of marketing like search engine or social media, or you're even using paid ads, you are literally driving cold traffic. Except in social media, in all other cases, you're driving cold traffic. The traffic is completely cold. They don't know you. They don't trust, like, and believe in what you have to say. They're just window shopping by. But with content marketing, and of course, even in social media, you nurture them and you build a brand, you build a relationship with them before you actually sell on them. And next, with any other means, you really don't get an option to be on top of their mind in all means. Of course, in the past, they used to spend millions of dollars advertising in television, radio, billboards, and all that, newspapers, to be on top of mind. But that's pretty expensive. Not everyone can do that. But with content marketing, everyone absolutely can do it. There are certain platforms online which does not allow advertising. Most of the platforms online, the advertising platforms are pretty new. They're just coming up, and they're making it familiar right now. But imagine if you want to be on top of mind and you like to be on all the platforms and be in their mobiles, be on any information that they're consuming, you cannot do that by advertising. You are limited in the places where you can advertise. You are limited in the limited with the budget to advertise. You are limited in every way, time and targeting and meticulous planning and so on. So you are limited. You cannot be on top of mind every day, every time. It's only until you have money that you can run there. But with content marketing, you definitely can do it in all platforms organically. You can get your presence out there. You can start publishing content. If you're a solopreneur, you can actually start creating all different types of content yourself. You cannot repurpose. You cannot distribute effectively like an agency like ours can do. But still, you at least can get started on the top few platforms and creating your own content and create the top of mind or top leadership effect there. So this is an age of trust. There's only one currency here, and that's trust. If you earn the trust of an industry, market, consumers, or an individual, they buy from you. They even if you're 10, 20, 30, 50, or 100, 200% higher in price, people still buy from thought leaders. People buy from industry experts. And that is what content marketing provides. You can advertise like crazy, but they are not going to believe that you're thought leaders. Of course, you're spending a lot of money, you're a cash-rich company, and all that feeling is great. But if they stumble across you in any part of the web, wherever they go, their mobile apps or their web, social media, search engine, or anything and anywhere they go, they just find things about you, and you're not selling them. You're educating them. That gives a powerful feeling. Selling someone and educating someone are two different things. When you educate them, they get an innate bond with your brand. They know that when they need to learn something in this industry, they can reach out to you or your business website or your blog, because you teach them. You don't just go ahead and start selling them like crazy. And when that trust is built, they know that whatever you sell is of very high standards, because they have already been reading what is your knowledge and what is your depth and your expertise in the industry. So the sales pitch becomes pretty simple. Your life becomes easy. You end up being in harmony with the way the world functions and the way even you would buy something online. You wouldn't just buy it from an ad. You would be interested after looking at the ad, but you still, if you know the brand by that point in time, you would definitely buy on them immediately because you trust them. So trust is a currency, and trust is something that content marketing has plenty in it.
You know, out of all this stuff, what do you love the most about content marketing? You're so passionate about it. I mean, what is the most delicious part about what can be done with content marketing? I mean, it's just a one-off. I'm sorry, but I'm caught up in just how detailed you approach everything, and there's got to be a driving factor.
The simplicity and the complexity of the beast is what attracts me. It is so simple. You could just start recording a video Periscope and get that uploaded to YouTube, and from YouTube you can get a very poor transcript and you can start using that to create all of the content types. Life seems so easy when you look at it from the top, but when you go on implementing it, it goes so crazy, so meticulously hard, and it needs way too many resources than what anyone could actually afford, and that is a challenge. If I can take the simple looking beast, which is so complex to actually execute, to all small businesses and mid-level corporations, and help them to execute at the same level of proficiency or better level of proficiency than an enterprise, then that is that's something that is bigger than life.
So that's powerful. That's important. I mean, that really is, because you are giving that kind of leverage. And we've heard it time and time again, how people have just been like, where you been all my life? we've heard people say, yes, I've always had this dream, but never realized it was possible until then. So this brings us to an important challenge, and you just alluded to it, but it's in the budget. It's in the budget for a couple of reasons. It's in the budget because senior level management needs to understand the value of content marketing in order to get around the idea that it's only a long-term strategy, though it does have its long-term strategy side to it. But a lot of times it's seen as a more advanced process. It's also got this mystique to it, like we've been talking about ROI, so it doesn't have as much control mechanisms built into it, and there really has to be a strategy and an approach. So now all of a sudden, this process to make this happen starts to inflate the budget. Whether you're going outside or doing it internally, time is part of the budget, resources is part of the budget, leveraging existing assets in a way that can actually help reduce the financial part of the budget, which is another piece, is a part of it. So just as convoluted as the ROI question is, the ability to find and appropriate a budget for content marketing, first starts with the belief in what it will do, and then backs up to a strategy and a plan for generating ROI. But then it comes right down to the money that you have to put into it. What are some ways that you help move this idea along and work with a company to get them in a position where that budget can be had, and talk also along the lines of, a lot of companies have a marketing budget, but they're appropriating it in a way that is probably not efficient. And what does this approach offer that would allow for that budget maybe to be moved greatly enhanced its ROI as a result of moving that budget around or whatever.
Right. Okay, before I answer that, I have a problem with your question, which I'd like to address. When you're asking this question, you went across a point when you referred that ROI is a little bit loosely tied into content marketing and all that. So I'd just like to bring about that topic a moment before I jump on to actual question of yours.
Sure.
Consider this. You're driving a car, and you have a driver, you're driving the car every day, and you're using gas to drive and so on and so forth. And now if you're being sold onto a car which is similar, but it is 10% fuel efficient, it's easy for you to calculate it. You would go and say, okay, right now I'm spending $500 on fuel every month, and right now with this fuel efficient car which saves my 10%, I would be saving $50 a month, and that is my ROI when I'm buying this car. But right now, let's imagine a very distinct car. So it's considered something like a Google car. They're saying that you don't have to pay your driver because it is a driverless car, and you don't have to pay for gas because it gets charged in electricity. You save there, and in fact, as you drive, it collects solar energy and even charges your battery up, so you can use that battery for anything else. Now you actually create more electricity, and as you drive, you're able to work. Now you're able to do your job, you're able to do all your functions as you go on travel, and now you're able to increase your productivity there. And as you travel now, you're not coming out with any carbon pollution. You're saving the world, and that's something that you cannot really calculate because it ties in with so many other factors. And now they come up with the 20 other unique benefits. And now when I ask you to evaluate an ROI for this, of course it's going to be meticulously hard to evaluate an ROI for this. But the point is simple. When you compare it with any basic thing, okay, taking a basic car and comparing it with this, yeah, of course, it's 100%, 200% or much more, it's higher in ROI than any other normal car in the market. But if you really want to calculate an ROI for this and specifically track it, it is meticulous because it is powerful and it is unique and it has way too many benefits than what a normal competing product or solution in the market would be. And that's the same thing when you compare content marketing with any traditional digital marketing activities. If it's if it's an SEO against a better SEO solution, then you definitely can find the answer. If it's a social media versus a powerful analytical super duper nice fancy pant of social media software, then you definitely can evaluate its ROI easily. Or if it's a new platform, Facebook versus Twitter, you definitely can compare it. But when it is an all-in-one and still has more new benefits which none of the other platforms have, then there comes a point when it appears complex to calculate, but it doesn't mean that it is not calculatable. It just means that there are many things which you really don't have to calculate. You know that it is helping you and it saves your time. You don't really have to go and calculate your hourly rate and see how many minutes it saves and how many hours it saves you when you drive that supercar. So that's my view on why content marketing is different and why it should be seen different instead of trying to put it into traditional boxes of traditional ROI mechanisms. Okay, that said, I know we have less than 12 minutes for the show to end. So to answer on budgeting, when you're running this content marketing campaign, just like I told you a little earlier, it is an all-in-one solution. It has everything else that you need in digital marketing combined in one place. So there's no point in running a separate search engine optimization campaign, separate social media campaign, and then still running a content marketing campaign. When content marketing campaign comes in, it replaces everything else or it supersedes everything else because it has all those components inbuilt. So it is a time for you to consolidate all your efforts in one place, and that is content marketing. If you don't consolidate your effort, you're not going to lose much, but you're just going to waste your money whichever you spend on other areas, or you're just going to make benefits of content marketing of singular messaging and such obsolete because you're trying to send a separate message across separately yourself. So when I look at content marketing and the way it is executed, anything that is done as a digital campaign should be a consolidative effort. It should all be worked into one document, one plan, one vendor, or one system which fits everything in place. If you don't do that, then there are a lot of leaks in the system which is not going to be beneficial. So there are many cases when businesses want to test out a couple vendors at the same time because they are trying to have a plan A and plan B. But content marketing is a plan A, B, C, and D, and you don't really have to have plan A and plan B there. So that's my perspective when it comes to adjusting the campaigns and adjusting the budget from all different boxes to one, and that's content marketing. And coming to whether doing it in-house would be effective or working with a vendor would be effective, it really depends. If it is you who is doing it and you can manage to do everything, you can. It is going to be most cost-effective, but you cannot, and that's the bottom line. So people tried it over and over and over, and they have failed. And even people who have like 5-people company, 10-people or agencies, 20 people agencies, they have tried and they were able to do few things, but the cost just goes so high that it becomes ineffective for them to do it. Currently, very large enterprises, they do parts of content marketing. That's something to be noted because even Fortune 100 companies, they don't execute content marketing in its full shape and form because they have their own system and own in-house resources to do it, and that is not complete. Not all resources can, even if a Fortune 100 company sets up their own resource, they still will have a lacuna there because their expertise differs in all measures when it comes to a digital campaign. So coming down to doing it yourself and getting it done by someone else, it really depends on whom you're trying to get it done from. If it is Key Difference Media and as the vendor, I know that anywhere they try to get it done, they would always end up at 5 times the higher cost, or that's at least the amount of extra. And even if they try to have their freelancers or if they try to hire their own staffs in-house, it would always end up costing them more than 5 times. But if they are working with some of the vendors or freelancers, then the rate would definitely differ, and it is hard to evaluate and say right off in the call. But yes, it is not. It is definitely not. I mean, if you try to put all tasks in an hourly rate basis and you try to justify it and do it, end of the day, result matters. If you're unable to if you don't have a system that has been built on millions of dollars of time, money, expenditure, and experience, then probably the system that you're building is new and it needs time before it can even start working, which is going to be a lot of money wasted on testing and trying and tweaking things. So, yep.
There are so many variables to deal with, so many. I'm going to go to a commercial break, but when I get back, I want to address the one thing that a lot of people, I think it's a big bogus myth, that people perceive about content marketing and even a digital agency like ourselves. And they believe that what we do is we just produce a ton of content that we beat people over the head with by flooding the internet. I don't know if you realize that the idea of flooding the internet is like trying to it's like trying to flood the Indian Ocean with a spoon. It's not a possibility. You have to be very strategic. But I just want to address that because it's oftentimes an initial conception about what we do and how we do it, as opposed to the very strategic approach that gets taken. So there is some balance between having enough content out there and then just wasting your time with what you're doing. We'll be right back after a quick commercial.
4D Story is an entertaining way to promote products and services in both online and offline environments. By broadcasting a fictional story with characters engineered around real life, 4D Story engages fans and encourages viral sharing. Do you have a charity that's stalled or struggling to find donors or simply unorganized? The Art of Charitable Giving can help you with programs and strategies to boost your leadership, management, fundraising, and marketing. We've turned charitable giving into an art. TheArtOfCharitableGiving.com.
Oh, I've been talking on mute. That's always the sign of a good radio show host, if he can use the buttons when they're in his left hand, not in his right hand. Okay, very good. So, Mr. Key, let's go ahead and talk about this idea that repurposing content and syndicating it. Is it or is it not the idea of just flooding the internet with so much content that you somehow strong-arm everybody else out of their pole position in the search engines?
Right. So it is not just about blindly flooding content and getting a lot of pieces out there. That's called spamming. So what we do here is to understand the need of the end user and what are the questions that's in their mind, and creating content which goes around that, which answers that, which supports that, and which forms as a step before or in the buying cycle of a client. So It is more of a strategic positioning of a content and the right formatting in terms of what it should deliver as a value and where it fits into the whole life cycle of a client. And once we determine that and we create those pieces, it's the next step is all about determining the right places where it has to go and getting it out there. So again, at this point, a lot of formatting and the way it is done and the way it is executed matters. And it probably is another 1 hour of conversation with metrics and sub-segments and inclusions. But to keep it in, to give a short answer there, flooding a content is about trying to just put up a same content everywhere and you know, whether it fits the particular site or not. But when it comes to a strategic content marketing, you change how something fits in a particular site. You care about every piece of content that goes out in every site specifically and in a specific manner, and you ensure that it all meets its end objective by end of the day. So the difference between it's the difference between eating in diet and eating and growing fat. If you know what your metabolic rate is, if you know what your you know, your burnout rate of calorie a day, and you know what your consumption is, and you know what are the foods that you're eating, you could end up having same amount of calorie eating healthy foods and unhealthy foods. So finding what a healthy food is and eating that and going through the process by eating in the right time, the right way, and all that, that's, you know, it's eating. You could eat anyway, but if you eat it the right way, that becomes dieting. You really don't have to eat lesser. In fact, when I diet, I eat more than what I would normally eat, but I eat it strategically. And this, that's the same thing with content marketing. You could flood it or you could do it the right way in the content marketing process. And the difference is not clearly seen by an outsider, but if it is something that is run as a process, and if you have a complete understanding, you would know what the difference is. And that's huge. It's a vast black and white difference between both.
Well, there seems to be a black and white difference in the way we approach a lot of aspects of this content marketing. And I so appreciate the dedication that you have put forth towards this, because I think your approach is going to be a blueprint that others are going to attempt to emulate. And I know that is a tall order for you. Have been doing this for the better part of a decade now, and the means by which to perfecting the process is a it's a long road. And so if anybody's out there, our listeners who are out there, you know, I watched that the movie The Martian, or the one where we leave a guy on Mars here recently. So I think that's still rattling around in my head. If anybody's out there, so if anybody is listening, check out keydifferencemedia.com/dominate, and you will be able to grab your domination kit from there and discover just how much of a partner Key Difference Media is on your side. Mr. Key, we got 2 minutes. Take us out with something that just, you know, blows our mind. Tell us the next airplane you're going to jump out of. I think that's what we need to hear. Or the next wild animal safari you're planning. What you got in the hopper?
Okay, so to me, I would like to start going on to different paragliding trips with not unrecognized hill. So I'd like to work on the hill for 2 days and figure out the way and how the wind functions. And I like to do my own math and my own work, and I like to start flying there. So that's my next step. And I would like to backpack my paraglider and start going to different hills and discovering hills that are paragliding worthy.
Hills that are paragliding worthy. What is the most important thing in the last 60 seconds that you need to know picking a paragliding hill?
So it should be first easy to climb. Of course, it's not all hills are easy to climb, but you need to ensure that you do not have too many venturies and places where the wind is very high and unpredictable, that it puts you off from the normal flying speed. So you need to know whether that gust winds and the time that you're flying is suitable for your glider and your experience, and whether the location and the number of hills that is alongside and the entire the typography of the place, it should really match with your experience and what you can do. So that's a big chapter by itself.
Well, it's in such parallel with the man who has conquered the repurposing and distribution of content as it applies to the internet that you would have such a awesome side sport. We're going to close out with a commercial.
Ever wish
thank you
that you could take the mystery out of search engine results? Well, now you can. Discover how you can dominate the first three pages of Google with Key Difference Media. Go to keydifferencemedia.com/dominate. Content marketing unlocked.